idea was that? Hi, everybody in Zoom. I'm Colby Love. My sober date is March 1st, 2011. I want to thank all the committee members and Troy and Jason and everybody. You guys have been so hospitable out here in Wichita. Your water tastes funny. The roles were weird, but you guys are awesome. The camaraderie you guys have out here is great. Oh my God. I'm not a crier either, you guys. I don't even want to talk about it. It's too much. I'm done. No, just kidding. Yeah, so I am here from Phoenix. We live, me and my fiance. I got one of those today. Got a fiance, and we're in Wichita. And my pops is here. My new friend Clinton. Yeah. And my doctor friend. Yeah, I made some new friends. This is great. You guys are gonna wanna be my friend when I'm done. So I'm Colby Love on Facebook. But just come up and tell me after that you sent me a friend request so I can accept it, because I have like a gazillion in there. I work in treatment, so all my clients always want to be my friends. And I have these really good boundaries thanks to this program where I don't become Facebook friends with clients. So just let me know. Just tell me that you sent me a request and I'll accept it. Otherwise, I won't. And then you'll have a resentment against me and then I'll be on your fourth step. And I don't want to do that. So I grew up in Little Compton, Rhode Island, with an alcoholic mom and dad. My dad used to say, "What's wrong with this picture?" And me and my sister would run and get him a beer. I used to hold this mirror for my mom, thinking I was helping her out. Turns out I was holding the mirror for her to do lines of cocaine. But nothing was weird to me, because when you grow up in an alcoholic home and you grow up in an alcoholic lifestyle, that's what it is. You know, you don't talk about it. What happens in an alcoholic home stays in an alcoholic home. You're taught that at a young age. And it's not like they tell you. But they tell you, you know, like, you don't talk about this stuff at school. And it just is what it is. I wasn't like B or like, so I mean, it turns out he gave me Benadryl every night to go to sleep. But I'm fine, you know. I know that me and my sister spent a lot of time in our rooms at nighttime because they would be partying and doing what they do. And we drilled a hole in the wall so we could see each other through each other's rooms. But we should have been in bed anyway, so it's fine. So I can't tell you like the first time I had a drink and it was like a magical feeling or anything like that. Like when I was old enough to start drinking, 13, 14, 15, whatever, that's what I did. And I always drank to excess. And my mom and dad split. My mom was a whore. I love my mom to death, but she's a drunk whore and she'd have all these men over all the time and do her thing and then, or would get left with my aunt. And then when we were with my dad on the weekends, he would take us with him everywhere he went. We went to all the bars. So I learned all the songs on the jukebox. They were always giving us dollars to play the games and stuff. But we weren't never abused. We weren't hit. We weren't touched. We just grew up in a bar, you know? So, of course, when it comes time for me to have fun, I love the bar. It's my favorite scene. So I would dress up. And when I was like 18, I was in a bad drinking and driving car accident. My friend was driving, and I broke my arm. And I had to be taken care of, and my mom wasn't able to take care of me because she was being her, and my grandparents took care of me, so I was flown over to New York, to Long Island, so that's where my real partying started, and we would all get dressed up and go to the bar and have a great time, and then the next night, we'd all get dressed up to go to the bar again, and I'm not allowed in, and I'm like, what? And there was bouncers back in the day, so the bouncer would be like, no, you can't come in. And I'd be like, why not? And they'd be like, well, you stole the tips off the bar last night, and you were, like, buying drinks with them. You can't do that here. So I was like, oh. And I don't remember anything because I'm a blackout drunk. You know, or I'd go there, and they'd say, no, you can't come in. And I'd say, why not? And they're like, well, you were dancing naked on the pool table last night. That's frowned upon. So you can't come in. I still do that. There's some pool tables here, right? Hey. 12:30, you guys. He'll be asleep. Call me. Just kidding. I don't live like that anymore. Only on Tuesdays. Thank God it's Saturday. Or I'd go back and, you know, I go to go in and they're like, you can't come in. I'm like, why not? And they said, you were in the bathroom last night doing weird things with weird people, and that's frowned upon here. So I got sick and tired of not remembering. I got sick and tired of waking up and looking outside and my car's not there and having no idea where it's at. Or I'd wake up and my car is there and I have no idea how it got there and it's all crooked. So somebody introduces me to cocaine. They're like, bro, when you drink, you need to do some cocaine because you won't black out and then you'll remember things and you'll be able to drink the whole night. And I was like, bet that. So my first time, we're at the bar. I start to feel drunk. Somebody gives me a line. I go to the bathroom. I puke. And then I feel great. And I can drink the whole night. So that was my jam for a long time. When I say a long time, like 10 years. I would drink, do some coke, and I'm good. And I did that successfully for a while until my grandmother says, like, what are you going to do with your life? I was working at Pier 1 Imports. I thought I was doing good, but I would stay out and party all night. She ended up kicking me out. And I ended up going to school to be a nurse. So I got my CNA, I became a certified phlebotomist, I got a job at a prominent hospital in Stony Brook, New York. I worked on a stroke unit, I cared for elderly people, or whoever had a stroke, and I would draw blood, and I love people, I'm a people person. And I was going to school to be a nurse. And I ended up having a kid, and then I ended up having another kid. So now I got two kids, a nursing career, a job, bills, a house, all the stuffs. She ended up buying us a bagel store. And I have on the outside, everything looks great and perfect. And these kids are cute and they're beautiful and everything looks like it should. But on the inside, I'm a mess because I love, love, love to drink and do cocaine and prescription pills too. Those are cool. I like the itch and the nod. And you can do those at home, and then it's just like, oh, I have a burst of energy, I'm cleaning the house, you know, but before you nod out. So, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. So, that all works for a while, but here's the only way I can describe it. When I'm getting high or when I'm drinking, there's a fire inside of me that has to be fueled. And the only thing that can fuel that is drugs and alcohol. And although I love my kids, and I love my career, and I love my dad, and I love my grandmother, I love my family, they don't satisfy me like the drugs and alcohol does. So unfortunately, anything that gets in the way of me and my drinking and drugging has to go. And that's to include all those things I just named. So 2005, I got caught in a lie. My ex-husband, now he's my ex-husband, calls me up and says, when I come home from work, we're going to talk about what just happened. Because you see what happened was, I really like to drink and party. I love the bar scene. And after work, the nurses, they go out for a couple drinks. It's just what we do. We go and we process and we talk about what happened. Because sometimes people die and you get a tag and bring them to the morgue. Codes happen. So we'd all go have a couple drinks. But once I have a couple drinks, my phenomenon of craving kicks on and I can't stop. But I didn't know anything about this. So we'd have a couple drinks. The nurses would go home and go to sleep and do their day. I have a couple drinks, and I'm at the trailer park getting cocaine. Then before you know it, it's 6 in the morning again, every time. And here comes the fucking sun, and I'm like, fuck, what am I going to tell this dude now? You know what I mean? You can only tell your significant other lies so many times. Like, the car can only break down so many times. You can only have so many flat tires. His mom can have died only so many times. Like, I have these stories, but I'm running out. So I made up that I had a job. So I told him and my whole family that I took on another job and I take care of this elderly gentleman so that I could bring in more money for the household because he's not pulling his weight. So I got to get another job. All lies. And I'm going to use my CNA license and I'm going to take care of this elderly gentleman from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. And that's what I'm going to do. Yeah. So from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., I go to my other job, I'm at the bar. I'm out drinking and drugging. Everybody knows the story. Everybody knows what I'm doing. Everyone's sliding me 20, so when I come home, I can put the cash on the table so it looks like I was really going to work. But you see, I'm stupid, so I would party in the same town. So the husband is like, were you at the bar last night? No. I was taking care of the elderly gentleman to support this household. Are you sure? Because Chris said he saw you there. I'm like, Chris is a fucking liar, and he just wants to break us up. And he's like, all right, cool. So I fucking hate Chris. And you know that. You know what Chris says about you behind your back? You know, make up a whole thing. Because you got to make it a whole big smoke and mirrors game, right? Horse and pony show. It has to be. Everything has to be a big deal. And so then the next day, or maybe a week later, you guys know, too, I have, like, meth mind, so everything is a go. I can't tell you, like, time frames. But all I know is it's now... He now has photo evidence. He shows me a picture. He says, were you at the bar last night? No. Is this not you? that is absolutely not me. As I'm looking at a picture of me, right? That is absolutely not me. Somebody photoshopped that to put me into that picture. And I don't think you should talk to them anymore. Because they're trying to ruin this family, right? So now it's another night, and he calls me at work. I really am at work, and he says, "Hey, we really need to talk. When you get home, we're going to talk about the new evidence that I have." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So that was in 2005, and I never went home again. To this day, I still have not been home. Okay. So there's an acronym for fear: fuck everything and run. That's where I lived my whole life. Today, I like to live over here and face everything and recover, but this whole first part of my story, you're going to hear fuck everything and run, because it's easier for me. I like to stay over here today, but I didn't know how. I didn't even know it was a thing. So I live in my car, right? What else would I do? I live in my car, and that only works for so long, and then I call my mom in Vermont, and I tell her what's going on, and she tells me to come up there. Now, I don't even know... I can't remember how I got there. Like, I know I drove my car there, but I didn't have any plates on my car, so I'm not sure if I drove it with no plates or what, but I remember when I got there, I told her what's going on. I said, "Mom, I left the kids, I left my nursing career, I left my job, I left the house, like, I've just left. I've been in my car for, like, the last 3 months, and, like the big book talks about our problems become so astonishingly difficult that we'll never figure out how to solve them, or we don't know how to solve them, and that's where I'm at." And I say to her, "I don't know what I'm going to do." And she says, "Let's go to the bar." Perfect. And that's the solution, you know? So I said, "Okay, but I don't have any plates on my car." So she tells me to take a plate off the truck that's in the driveway and put it on my car. So I do. So I get a knife and I take it off and I put it on my car. We get in the car in the purple Dodge Neon in the small town of Brattleboro, Vermont, and we head to the bar. So we're at the bar. We're hanging out. It's about 8 o'clock. And she says, "Kelby, I'm drunk. I'm going to go home." I said, "Ma, it's fucking 8 o'clock. I am absolutely not going home." And she's like, "I have to go home." And I'm like, "Okay." So I take her drunk ass and drop her off, and I go back out on a cocaine mission. Now I can't find any cocaine. And it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. You hear me? I'm from Wichita now. I couldn't find any cocaine. They were plumb out of cocaine. Can you believe it? Maybe I'm from Alabama. I don't know. We'll see. We'll figure it out. So I can't find any coke, and I'm speeding through the small town of Brattleboro, Vermont, doing however fast, and in a purple Dodge Neon. I stick out like a sore thumb. I got my system booming. The windows are tinted where you can't even see anything, and I get pulled over. And I don't have a license, and I know that the plate on this fucking car is not the one that goes, but I don't even care. So anyways, the cop pulls me over. Well, he tries to. I hurry up and park the car. I throw the keys. I start walking like I was just walking, and he's like, "Ma'am." And I keep going. He says, "Ma'am, you dropped your keys." And I turn around, and then he gets me. And there's my second DUI, right? And he says, "You want to know why I pulled you over?" I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Well, do you want to know how I knew?" Like, he's like, goes under this whole thing. I'm like, "What?" And then he's like, "The plate doesn't belong to this car." And I'm like, "Yes, it does." And he's like, "It says TRK down the side on the plate. So that's clearly a truck plate, Stupid. How stupid. So anyways, there's my second DUI. And now I'm on my mom's couch. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning. My head is pounding. I'm like, what am I going to do now? Because there goes my car, my house, my everything, my kids, everything starts hitting me. And she's in the chair next to me. She's an opiate addict as well, and she nods out in her chair. And there's cigarette burns all around it. So we're like almost on fire all the time. Like, I'll smell it. I'll be like, ma, psh, Like, we're almost on fire. And she sits in that chair, and she has these cats, and she drinks her wine, and she takes her pills, and she chain smokes cigarettes in the house, in a studio apartment. Like, this is where I'm at. This is where I chose to go. I left the house and the kids and the career to go do this. And she's, like, trying to wake me up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I can hear her, and she wants me to drink with her. And I'm like, I'm going to fucking kill this bitch. I'm gonna take these cats, and I'm going to fucking throw them around the room, and then I'm going to kill her, and then I'm going to kill myself, and I'm going to make the whole thing look like a setup. Yeah, can you believe I said that about cats? Clinton is astonished. And my phone rings, and I'm like, hello. And it's the cocaine dealer from New York, from the trailer park. And he's like, bro, what are you doing? I'm like, you want to know what I'm fucking doing right now? I'm going to fucking kill myself. I'm going to kill this bitch. I say it loud enough so she can hear me. And I'm going to light this whole fucking thing on fire. And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. And anyone that knows me knows I don't get down like that. I don't talk like that. It's like, so he's like, what is going on? And he's like, and I heard you left the girls. Like, are you okay? I'm like, no, dude, I'm not okay. I'm like, absolutely not okay. And I need help. And he's like, well, guess what? I'm on like a little sabbatical right now. I took my dog and I drove cross country and I'm in a place called Arizona. I'm at a friend named Evan's house and I'm staying there and I don't have any drugs and I don't have any alcohol. And like, I'm gonna get clean. And he's like, is that what you want too? I'm like, that's what I want too. You know, cause I had like a moment of clarity and like, that's what I want. I want to get clean. I want to get sober. I want to fix everything. And I want my kids back. Any mother that's left their kids, like, has that, no matter what, has that deep hole, and we want our kids back. We don't leave because we don't love them. We leave because we're fighting with some fucking demons in here. And it, maybe it's not even about, sometimes it's about the other person, but it definitely ain't about them kids, you know? So, like, that's my ultimate goal, is to get these kids back and get my life right. He says, fool, I'll buy you a ticket. I'll buy you a ticket, and you can one way out here. We'll be on a little sabbatical. We'll get clean and sober, and then we'll get in the car with the dog, and we'll drive back to New York. You go your way, and I'll go my way, and that'll be that. I'm like, perfect. Again, fuck everything and run. So he buys me a ticket. March 17, 2005, I tell my mom, I said, Mom, I'm going to Arizona. She said, that's nice. I said, where's Arizona? Because I don't know nothing about nothing over there. I'm from over here, New England. You know, I know about New Hampshire, Vermont, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New York, nothing else. I don't know nothing about no Wild Wild West. I found out real quick, though. So she tells me it's in California. I said, okay. So I pack a backpack full of bikinis, and on a plane I go to California, March 17, 2005. Now March 17th is St. Patrick's Day, and I'm Irish, so I begin to drink. I was going to drink anyways, but anytime there's a holiday or something, you know what I mean, like you can blame it on, like that's what I'm about. So I get wasted at the airport. I'm looking around the airport. I'm like seeing who's got some cocaine because I'm starting to feel it. And I'm like eyeing people up and I'm like, hey, you party? And dude's like, I'm on a business trip. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I see a lady over here and I'm like, oh, she must party. I'm like, hey, you got any? She like grabs her kids closer, you know, like everyone thinks I'm a fucking monster. They put me on the plane and they put me in the middle seat. Don't ever put me in the middle seat. And I start to harass these two bunkies right here for cocaine. And they're both asking me to politely to stop. And I guess I won't. And I remember the stewardess came over and said, ma'am, if you don't calm down, we're going to have to ask you to deplane. And I was like, what kind of fucking plane doesn't have any cocaine? And I was pissed, but I don't remember anything else. I don't remember getting off the plane. I don't remember dude picking me up. I don't remember driving back to 7th Street and Bell with this guy. I don't remember hounding him for cocaine the whole way. I don't remember giving him two black eyes and a bloody nose. And I sure don't remember him getting back in his car with his dog and his stuff and driving back to New York and leaving my drunk ass there. I remember nothing. So I wake up in the morning in a beanbag chair, slobber all over my face, and there's a guy right there playing video games. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, where am I, you know? So I tell this guy, good morning. And he's like, oh, good morning, sunshine. And I introduce myself. He says, I know who you are. I met you last night. And I guess I had a blank stare. So he goes on to tell me what happened and that the guy left me here. But I would just like to point out, in my defense, I was drunk. And he is the cocaine dealer, so I don't remember that we're out there to be on a sabbatical to stop. Like, I just thought he was holding out. So he deserved it. not in recovery mind, you know, but like that. So anyway, so I told this dude, I'm like, what? Like, this guy just left me here? He just left me in the middle of California to fend for myself. Dude's like, well, first of all, we're in Arizona. I'm like, yeah, Arizona in the middle of California. And he's like, no, dude, that's not a thing. And he like pulls up a Google map and he shows me where the states are and how they touch, but they're absolutely not inside of each other. And I'm like, what the fuck ever? You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, well, what am I going to do? And he's like, well, I don't know what you're going to do. But if as long as you don't drink like that every day, and as long as you don't put your hands on me, you're free to stay here in the other room, and my kids come over on the weekend, you can, like, watch them so I don't have to hire a babysitter, until you figure out what you're going to do. And I'm like, okay, cool. And by the way, I do drink every day and end up putting my hands on him, too. This relationship that I'm in right here right now is the first relationship that I've ever been in where I haven't put my hands on somebody. Like, I'm just fucked up individual. You know what I mean? But this program, you guys in the rooms, have taught me how to act like a lady. Somewhat. For the most part. Yeah, ladies. Oh, no? Yeah? Okay. So I tell this dude, I'm like, all right, cool. Like, I'll stay here. Or, I mean, like, I have a choice. Yeah, I'll stay here. But I'm like, I need some air. So I open up this balcony, okay? And I look outside. And I just came from Vermont where my mom's chain smoking cigarettes and fucking cats everywhere and cat hair all over me. And I fucking hate cats at this point in my life. And the story's funny because I have 12 cats now. I have 12 cats and 5 dogs. We'll talk about that. Hopefully we run out of time so we don't have to talk about it. I'm just telling you, I have animals alcoholically. I still have alcoholic tendencies that I'm working on. I lost my license for 14 years. As soon as I got it back, I got 5 speeding tickets. Like, I had to hire a lawyer to keep my license. So, but that's separate stuff. And that newcomers don't listen to that stuff. Just listen to the, like, joy and, like, the, you know, hope, faith, and courage, okay? Don't listen to the other bad stuff. So I open up the balcony here. And I look outside, and it's fucking beautiful here. And it's March 17th, and it's like 70 degrees. I just came from like negative 20, 3 feet of snow. I couldn't even open the screen door. They got palm trees there, so I feel like I'm in Florida. You know, and I'm like, oh, maybe I am on vacation. This is kind of cool. And I look down, and there's a pool. And there's people down there. And they're drinking. So guess what? I throw on a bikini, and down I go to the pool. Here I go. And I go down there, and I meet my first Mexican. And they tell me, hola, güera. And I'm like, oh, they like me. See, I don't know about out here in Kansas, but where I come from, we don't have Mexicans. In New York and over there, we have Puerto Ricans. But Arizona has a whole bunch of Mexicans. And it's new to me, you know? The whole thing's new. And they like to drink a lot of alcohol. So they asked me, ¿Quieres cerveza? Do I want a beer? And I said, sí, dame dos. So I start drinking. Yes, I'd like two. Thank you. You guys know what else Mexicans have? Coca. Yeah, they got the jale. So I start drinking and doing cocaine with the Mexicans for the next 5 years. I mean, like, there's more to the story, but, like, that's it in a nutshell. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't mean to fuck off my whole life, and I don't mean to not talk to my kids for 14 years. Like that's not how I planned the story to go, but, like, that's how it went, a day at a time. And I can remember parts of my story where I'd call my dad or send him a picture thinking I looked so good, all sucked up, 126 pounds. Like, look at me, Dad. And I'm a Skeletor. You know what I mean? Like, you could actually see through me. But it's crazy what the drugs and alcohol does to our brains. It makes us fucking delusional. And we can't differentiate the truth from the false. Like, just like that book talks about, it's nuts. So I eventually graduate from 7th Street and Bell to 19th Avenue Indian School. Anybody that's been to Arizona knows that that's not a good area. And Camelback and 27th Avenue and Bethany Home and all where the nice people play and prostitutes and gun wars and like all kinds of stuff. So I get me an apartment at this place called Coconut Grove, and I witnessed my first murder. You know, and just like some crazy stuff started happening. Oh yeah, let me tell you about the cocaine. So the cocaine in Arizona is garbage, okay? So I'm doing the cocaine, but I'm complaining about it because I'm like, what is this? And they're like, it's coca. I'm like, no, this is fucking basura, man. This is like, it's just garbage. So someone gives me a line of this other stuff one night because I'm complaining. So they put me out this little line, and I told them they better put out more than that because I party. So they put out this big line, and I do this big line of this stuff, and my face is on fire. I was like, what the fuck is that? My eyes are watering, and before you know it, my fucking vagina is on fire. I'm bent over like this, and I'm like, oh my God. What is that? Now that I'll never forget. Instantly hooked. I was up for 2 weeks straight. I ran around the streets tweaking my ass off for 5 fucking years, okay? And I graduated from snorting to smoking to slamming. And then I became so slammed out, I had no veins left. And I won't get into the graphics because my dad's here. But then I started doing butt rockets. Anybody ever do a butt rocket? Whole nother level. Only 4 of us? There'll be a tutorial tonight at 10:30, you guys. Yeah. Only four of us. We need to be better friends. I'm telling you right now. So, yeah, I end up doing like 37 butt rockets a day. And, holla. And selling dope. And now I'm selling big dope. And I'm making money. And I love to drink. I love to drink. It's my favorite thing. So I always got my bottles of Jim, Jack, and Jose lined up. But I can't drink because if I get a phone call from these entities that I'm selling drugs for and I don't answer the phone, they're going to come over with their street sweepers, and they've made that apparently clear. And I believe them. So I'm on point. I always am. And I make good money and I do all that. But I can't go anywhere. I don't have a license. I'm super paranoid. I'm like on the run all the time. I keep getting all these fucking charges. They put me in drug court. Like I'm just living a bad life, and I miss my kids, and anytime I think about them, it like brings tears to my eyes, so I have to get higher and higher and higher, and I don't have any veins left, and it's pissing me off, and I got robbed multiple times. I've been shot at. I got hogtied. They tried to kill me. They put a sock in my mouth and tried to like suffocate me. Like I got into some bad situations, and not once did I say, maybe I should look at my life and stop drinking and drugging. Not once did I think I had a problem. I would just call the plug and say, hey, man, I just got robbed, and they put me back on, and I would do it again and change my number because it was the phone, you know? Like it's just fucking crazy thinking. Never once did I pick up the phone and say, I need help, when my cousin in Florida owns a bunch of treatment centers. And I actually remember one time he called me, and he said, Colby, we're worried about you. I was like, who? He's like, the family is worried about you. Like, you want to come to treatment? And I was appalled that he thought that I had a problem. You know what I mean? I was insulted that they're over there talking about me, thinking that I have a problem. What the fuck? So anyways, I get locked up, and it's the best thing that ever happened to me. And so I got locked up a couple times. The first time I got locked up, I did try to get bonded out. I remember calling him, and he was like, nope. And then the second time I got locked up, I did 3 months for that one. The second time, I was non-bondable. And while I was in there, they page two me. So I stand in front of you with 12 felonies. But I also have 5 incomes. Please know that. I have 5 different jobs. So if you guys have any felonies, well, I shouldn't even talk about it. I don't know what goes down in Kansas. But in Arizona, it doesn't matter your history. Doesn't matter where you came from. Doesn't matter how many felonies you have or don't have. There's job opportunities for everybody. Watch everybody come move to Arizona. That'd be crazy. So now I'm in county jail, and I got arrested on February 25th, 2011. And I may or may not had an ounce of dope on me hidden in my underwear. So when I got arrested, I shoved it up my vagina. Sorry, Dad. And I have a vagina. Yeah, thank you. Vagina. I'll say it over here. So I had an ounce of dope on me, and I shoved it, and then so when I went through the matrix through the horseshoe, I was taking the dope out and eating it, right? Because I'm still a dope addict. I want you guys to know, I've never checked myself into a treatment center. I've never gone to detox. I've never gotten sick and tired of being sick and tired and, like, gone through the thing. I never got to wear a robe with the embroidered thing. I never got to do any of that. You know, I get to work in treatment today, which is awesome, but I did 7 years of rehab in the Arizona Department of Corrections. I never, ever wanted to stop drinking and drugging. I never thought I had a problem. I thought you did. So I get arrested, and I'm eating the dope. Mind you, I've been up for 5 years, okay? I may have fallen out a couple times. I have not eaten. I might have licked a donut twice. I remember once I went through a Wendy's drive-thru, chewed up the burger, and then spit it out just to get the nutrients. And I'm this minus 50 pounds. So I'm malnourished. I haven't slept. I'm super paranoid. And I'm high as a motherfucker. You know what I mean? I'm like higher than anybody's supposed to be, like doing the weird shit, doing all this stuff, you know? And it's hard to try to do your makeup too when you're fucking super high and your arm does stuff you don't tell it to do. And then they're always coming in my mind. They're always coming. I'm always, like, breaking my neck. I used to have to wear a neck brace because my fucking neck hurt so bad. I didn't have an orthopedic pillow. By the way, I loved your fucking story, dude. That shit was funny. You had me rolling the whole time. It was great. The visuals of the naked guy and the motorcycle, like, you know, the back part. I don't really like the front part. It kind of grosses me out. But it's just funny. And so you walked around with no pants, and I ran around the streets of Phoenix in a bikini. Like, I stayed in a bikini for 5 years. I don't think I ever wore clothes. And I'd be on a bicycle, too, in a bikini. It was crazy. Because I looked good at 126 pounds, know what I mean? So I'm in county jail. I'm eating dope. And so I'm already super high, and I'm already malnourished, and I haven't slept, and now I'm eating methamphetamines on top of that. Has anybody ever done that? It's a tripped out, not good high, and I start to get real paranoid, and I start to think, like, they are really coming now, you know, and there's cameras, and I have a bunch of dope on me, and, like, I'm all tripped out, and I go in the room where they have the cooking channel on the whole time, and I'm sitting there, and I'm writing to my sister, who I haven't talked to in years because of my addiction, but I'm just writing her a letter, and I can't take it anymore, the paranoia, and I go to the bathroom for the first time ever. I pull the dope out of my... and it sinks to the bottom of the toilet, and I flush it. First time ever I've ever wasted dope. Also the last time I've ever touched a mind-altering substance. So relapse is not a part of my story. I've never put my full energy and effort into it until this time I'm talking about right now. But relapse is a part of a lot of people's story. So please don't get it twisted. I'm not up here saying, like, oh, I've never relapsed, so I'm the best. I'm just telling you, if you haven't relapsed, you don't have to. But if you have relapsed, that's fucking important, too. People need to hear that. Because if you relapsed and been in treatment 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 17 times, there's somebody in the back that needs to hear that. Because they're one time behind you. And they need to know, they need to hear that it's okay. Everybody's walk and journey is different. And that's what makes us fucking awesome. It's important. Every single person here has a story. And God saved your ass for a reason. And you guys need to share that with other people. Like, and I'm no different than you guys. Clinton's no different than you guys. We're all the same. We all have the same opportunities. And I want you guys to know that sobriety is a motherfucking gift. Okay? We're going to get to that in a minute. And then the God thing. Let's talk about that real quick. Especially the new row right there. You're going to hear the word God a lot. That's a God of your understanding. Make it whatever you want it to be. You want to believe in Jesus Christ and the Lord, Mary, all that? Cool. That's good. Buddha, love, the atmosphere, whatever you want. It's up to you. You want to take the word God, put an extra O in it, and believe in good? That's cool, too. Get you a spiritual basket. Put a little bit of what she says, put it in there. Take a little of his, put it in there. If that's not working for you, take it out. It's your fucking basket. You put whatever you want. Start to talk to it. Give it a name, give it a face, and give everything to it. And then literally get the fuck out of the way and let that God work through you. And magic will happen. It's when we get in our own way that shit starts to go wrong. I promise you that. All right, so county jail, flush the dope. Very mad. I'm like, why did I do that? You know, I'm all mad at myself, upset, angry, and so I don't know what to do, so I start fighting. Because what else am I going to do? I can't get high, and I'm angry. So I start randomly pulling girls off bunks and beating the brakes off them. And then they'll throw me in the hole, and then they pepper spray us. And then after 3 days, they're like, are you going to act right, Rooney? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to act right. And then I come back, and I go to the shower, and I grab two of them, and I smash their heads together, and I start kicking them for no reason. Like, these girls have not even said a thing. But I'm angry, and I'm still selfish, self-centered, me. So I got to make me feel better, and it makes me feel better to hurt you at this stage in my life. So I do that. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. I don't even know how many times until I finally surrendered. And I was like, fuck, I give up. So I did like any good drug addict would do, and I went to medical. I'm like, if you don't fucking put me on some medicines, I'm going to fucking kill you. I'm going to fucking kill myself. I'm hearing voices. People are tapping me. They're saying my name continuously. I can't sleep. And they're like, okay. And they put me on 5 fucking psych meds. And I sleep for like 5 months. I sleep and I gain 80 pounds. They fucking rolled me out of that bitch at 204. But I needed it, okay? So after about 5, and then they come at me with my first piece of paper of all these felonies, and they tell me I'm going to go on to this place called prison. And prison's different than jail. By the way, I don't know there's a difference between a felony and a misdemeanor at this point. I don't know there's a difference between jail and prison. I don't know any of this stuff. I've never had consequences in my life. So now they're telling me I'm going to go to this place called prison for 9 to 22 years. I'm like, what the fuck? You guys can't do that. I'm not even an Arizona resident. I literally have a New York ID. They're like, we don't give a fuck. You sold dope to an undercover officer. You go here now. I was like, okay. You know, and then you know when you're in trouble and you're like trying to pull all the cards, and I'm like, well, I'm a mother. I have kids at home, you know. Not that I have a home. I haven't spoke to my kids in freaking however many years at that time. 5, 6, 7, 8 years at that time. So nice try, you know. So anyways, now fuck everything and run, okay? So none of my cards are working. So now I'm like, I need to get the fuck out of here. So I'm watching these doors of people come and go. And I see this one bitch, and she comes back, and she's smiling. And I'm like, hey, bitch, where the fuck were you right now? She said, AA. I said, we have AA in here? She's like, yeah. I'm like, well, how do I AA? And she's like, well, you have to get a tank order, and you got to put your name on it, and you got to get signed up, and you get on a list, and then when it's your turn, you go. And I'm like, well, will you do that for me? And she says, yeah. Because remember, I'm the dope man, so I still have dope man mentality. I ain't going to do shit for myself. You're going to do it for me. So she does it for me. And then I'm watching the door again, and here comes this other bitch. And she's smiling. And I'm like, hey, bitch, where were you at right now? She said, CMA. I said, CMA? What the fuck is that? She said, Crystal Meth Anonymous. I'm like, that's a thing? And she's like, yeah, that's a thing. I'm like, well, how do I CMA? And then she says the same thing the last bitch says. And then I said, will you sign me up? And she said, yeah. I'm like, cool. So now I'm laying in my bunk, and I'm staring at the metal ceiling, which is the top bunk. And here comes my Mexican bunkie with her little friend, and they're arm in arm with their little biblas, and they're skipping, and they're smiling. And I'm like, bunks, where the fuck were you right now? She said, La Iglesia, bunkie. I said, we have church here? She said, yeah. I said, Bunks, will you fucking sign me up? She said, yeah, you want English or Spanish? I said, I don't give a fuck if it's Chinese. Get me the fuck out of this room. And so they all signed me up. And then you know what happens? My name gets called, and I'm going to the CMA meeting, and I'm so excited. And I know that when I get out there, I'm gone. I'm fucking running away because fuck everything and run, and that's what I'm really good at. So I'm so excited. I'm finally going. I'm giving my stuff away. I'm saying bye to all my bunkies because I'm fucking out of here. And you know what happens? I'm screwed. You know what I mean? All I wanted to do was get out of the room so I could run away. I don't want to go to no fucking CMA meeting. And what happens is, though, they bring us in. They lock the door behind us. The cop sits there the whole time. And for the first time in my life, I fucking listen. And I hear a message of hope. And this fucking lady talks about how she lived in a box in the streets of Phoenix. And how she had her kids. And she left her kids to go live in this box. And she lived in that box for 8 years. And she is a dope fiend, and she had no teeth, and she's all sucked up. She, like, tells my story. You know, she left her kids, and then she had these other kids, and then she raised them in the box, and she just has this whole story of hope. And she talks about sobriety as a gift, and then she talks about, like she hasn't done drugs in 10 years. And I'm thinking, yeah, fucking right. That's crazy, you know? And that she's had the same job for the last 10 years, and that she drives a Camaro, and that she has kids, and that she has grandkids, and then they all eat dinner together as a family, and I'm thinking, I fucking want what this bitch has, you know? And here I am in stripes, looking at 9 to 22 years, sitting in a cold jail cell with a bunch of fucking hoes, and this lady's talking about freedom, and I'm all in. And every time she talks, I'm in tears, you know? And I'd go up to her after, and I'd say, how do I do that? And she'd say, well, keep coming back. Well, bitch, of course I'm going to keep coming back. I'm in the county jail. She'd say, you know what I mean. But so this lady brought in, so I'm a product of Rhonda Wright's H&I. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of Rhonda Wright. She's an awesome, awesome, awesome circuit speaker, and she's actually the reason I'm standing here tonight, because she got in their ears and said, here, you need to listen to this girl. And they listened, and they liked it. And I hope we get to continue this relationship, because you guys are great over here. So this lady comes in, and now I'm all excited, you know, and then I go to the church thing too, and I like the way it feels when they're singing the songs, and like the same girl that I just fought with in the pod, we're in the church service, and I look at her, I'm like, I'm sorry. And she's like, I'm sorry too, you know, and the Lord's music is playing, and we're fucking hugging each other, and like, so we learn how to like make amends, and like, I don't know, jail and then on to prison changed my whole life. Like, the Arizona Department of Corrections literally corrected my mind, body, and soul. Now, it's the steps that did that, but the fact that I couldn't leave, the fact that I couldn't get in my own way is what saved me. So I go to all Rhonda's things, but here's the thing, too, I don't even know her name yet. I just know she's a lady that lived in a box, and I like what she has, and I want to be like her. Like for the first time ever, I want to be like somebody. So I go on to prison, and there's this fire that's been lit under my ass, and it's still here today, obviously. And I want meetings. And I get to the yard, and they tell me that there's one AA meeting, and it's on Friday nights, and it's from 7 to 7:45. I'm like, well, that's cool, but that's not enough, you know? Because I'm now putting the same amount of energy and effort that I put into getting fucked up into my recovery. So I happen to call my dad, who's in the program, and I tell him where I'm at, and I tell him I want to do meetings, and he gives me the address to the GSO for AA, and I write to them, and they send me the literature, and I'm able to start meetings. And then I write to all the other A's. I write to the CMA, and I write to the AA, and the HA, and the NA, and the CA. I write all the people, and they send me all the stuff. So now I got all the stuff, and I have no idea what I'm doing. But the cool thing about these A's is there's a fucking format. All you got to do is read it. All you got to do is read it and get the fuck out of the way. So that's what we start to do. All of us girls, we start to meet together and we start to do this. And we sponsor each other and we do the steps. I've done the steps 14 times through while I was inside. I did them all kinds of different ways. I did the green and gold NA workbook. That was crucial. That's not the word. Grueling. Not crucial. Grueling. It was extra. It was real extra. That green and gold workbook. It was a lot. I did walking the 12 steps through Jesus Christ, to try that out. I did an Al-Anon thing. I did adult children of alcoholics. That was cool. I've done them directly the way you're supposed to do it, like this, four or five times. And I'll still continue to do that. But while I'm inside, I took advantage of every opportunity. I took a year-long women recovery program. And then they started this thing called a peer mentorship. And it was a new thing. And in order to do it, you had to take this 6-month training program. And after the 6-month training program, you then had to teach parenting, domestic violence, and reentry. So it's now my turn to teach parenting, domestic violence, and reentry. And I start tripping. Because who am I to teach parenting when I've left my kids? I've never reentered nothing in my life. Domestic violence? I just told you guys, this is the first guy that I never put my hands on. So you already know I'm not the one to teach domestic violence, right? I'm the poster child for opposite. So I start tripping, and my dad's always been my go-to. I would always call him with these problems and these woes and what am I going to do, and I would trip, and he would always direct me to the book. And he would always tell me, where to find the solution in the book. And he would always tell me, if the solution's not in the book, then you've made it up. It's not even a problem. It's not even a real thing. And he would always tell me about this fear thing where there's fear, there's a lack of God. So if I'm doing affirm 1, 2, and 3 every day like I'm supposed to, then who am I to take something back into fear stuff, right? He always led me the whole time through the book, through the program. Always, always, always. To this day, he still does. So anyways, he gets one of the phone calls, and I'm tripping because I got to teach these parenting, domestic violence, and reentry. And I'm like, Dad, what am I going to do? And he's like, well, did they give you a curriculum? I'm like, yeah, they fucking did, a big curriculum. And he's like, well, what's the problem? I'm like, I got to teach parenting, domestic violence, and reentry. I left the girls. I go through this whole thing. And he's like, he starts laughing. I'm like, what? He's like, you think this is about you? I'm like, yeah, I'm the teacher. He's like, this has nothing to do with you. How about you sit there, you open the book, you read the curriculum, you don't put any opinion on it, you shut the fuck up, and maybe you'll learn something. Click. And he was right. And he always did me like that. He would give me the solution and then hang up on me because he doesn't want to hear my bitching. There's no reason for that. The solution's in the book. The solution is to move out of the way. The solution is to trust God. Same thing that we learn in here. So if you guys don't have a parent that's in recovery, you're missing out because it's kind of cool. So that's how I do my time, right? So now it's time for me to get out, and they're like, where do you want to go? Well, I have nowhere to go because I have fucked off everything in my life. So they tell me that I'm going to go to a halfway house, and do I want to go to Phoenix? And I said, hell no, because that's where I ran around for the last 5 years in a bikini, and I don't want to go back there. So they tell me about this town called Mesa. So that's why I live in the town Mesa today. I parole there 2017. I get out of prison with 2 prison boxes and a clear TV. That's all I got. And no license, no family out here, no nothing. And I'm getting used to the world. I get really sick. I end up with pneumonia. Cars driving past me trips me out because we didn't have any. There's no cars in prison. You know what I mean? Everything's weird and new, and I'm tiptoeing everywhere I go. And the phone rings, and it's my sister, and she's like, "Hey, bitch, the cops are calling you." And I said, "I know. That's why I'm not answering." Because my phone rang, and it said Vermont State Police. I'm like, "How do these motherfuckers even know I'm out?" You know? Because I thought they wanted their money from that DUI that I didn't quite get around to yet. And she says, "No, you got to call them back. Mom died, and they want to talk to you." Oh, it was the worst thing, worst fucking phone call ever. So I call them. They tell me that my mom's overdosed, and I'm the next of kin, so they need me to go identify the body. So I call my PO, and I tell him I got to go to Vermont. I got to go take care of some stuff. He said, Rooney, you're maxed out, dude. You just got out 3 weeks ago. You're absolutely not leaving the state. You're not eligible for a travel permit. So I'm mad. I'm sad. I'm all the things. But thank God that I built a seven-year foundation while I was in prison so I could lean back on page 417, which talks about acceptance. And I'm not going to be okay until I can accept the fact that that's what she chose. She chose to wear double fentanyl patches, take her pills, and drink some wine. She chose to take so much, and I can't go. And it's not like I can be mad, I can be sad, I can be all the things, I can feel the feelings, but until I can accept it, I'm not going to be okay. And it's not okay for me to not be okay because of who I am, because of my disease. So, you see, while I'm sitting in prison, I had no idea that alcoholism and drug addiction is hereditary. I had no idea that it centers in my mind in a thing called a phenomenon of craving, and it's coupled with an allergy. I had no idea that once I start drinking or drugging, I physically cannot stop. I didn't know any of that stuff. I had no idea. But now that I've done this time and I've gone through this book and I know this book like the back of my motherfucking hand, shame on me if I go out and have a drink or a drug. And shame on me if I go medicate to ease the pain of my mom passing. So it just is what it is. But it's okay for me to be sad. It's okay for me to talk about it. It's okay for me to feel hurt. But it's not okay for me to self-medicate. And I know that from building the foundation. So I need to be around my people. And I just got out. I don't have any friends out here. All my family's back east. So I ask if I can borrow a bicycle. And I Google AA near me. And it takes me to this place called the Mesa Alano Club, which happens to be an AA meeting. And I ride the bicycle over to this AA meeting. And I sit in the back and I cry my eyes out. And the dinosaurs come up to me and they say, you know those dinosaurs? Those old timers? They come up to me and they say, oh, you're new here. Are you okay? Because you're crying. No, I'm fucking not okay, dude. I just got out of prison. I have fucking pneumonia. I don't know a soul. My fucking mom just died. My PO won't let me go bury the body. And I'm not okay. And they're like, okay. Well, we're all going to go out to eat after if you'd like to come. I'm like, out to eat? Fuck you. So I end up going. Next day, I end up riding my bicycle back there again. I sit in the back and they say, how are you doing today? And I'm like, I'm worse. I really don't feel good at all. And then they say, well, we're going to go out to ice cream after. Would you like to come? I'm like, ice cream? Fuck you. And they're like, so you'll come? I'm like, yeah, I'll come. You know, because they're getting to know me and I'm getting to know them. So then the next day I'm there again and then they invite me to this camping trip. And I said, camping? I don't drink. Why would I possibly go camping? Because, you see, I've never done anything sober. I've never gone to a wedding, camping. And while I'm in prison, too, I trip out about this stuff. I'm like, how am I going to have sex? How am I going to go to a wedding? How am I going to go bowling? How am I going to go to the movies? Like, how am I going to do anything without drugs and alcohol? Because I can't picture a life without it. And when you've done drugs and alcohol your whole life, how am I supposed to, you know? So someone just told me, like, don't trip. Worry about tomorrow when you get there. But you know me. I can't not trip. I have to worry about it. But I'm like, I don't want to be a square. I don't know how I'm going to ever do anything. So anyways, these people ask me to go camping, and I'm like, that's fucking weird, you know? And so here I am in a truck with five dudes that weekend going to this place called Payson to some camp out. And I go to this camp out, and I get there, and it's really cool, you know what I mean? And cool, it's colder, and what are those trees? Pine trees. Those are pretty cool. I hadn't seen those because, you know, they don't have those in Phoenix, but they have where I come from, so I'm like, this is cool, you know? And my mom just passed, so I'm like, I can, like, see the stars, and, like, I feel it, you know? I'm digging it, and speaker gets up, and she says, my name's Rhonda Wright, and I just live in a box in the streets of Phoenix, and I'm beside myself. I'm like, that's the lady, you know? And there's a dude next to me right here. I'm like, it's the lady. And he's like, yeah, it's the lady. Because I don't know she's a famous lady, okay? I just know to me she's just someone that touched me. I don't know she's this big CA circuit speaker. I have no idea. So, but I'm trying to tell these two guys next to me that were not in jail with me 10 years ago and have no idea what I'm talking about, how important she is to me. And they're like, shh, just listen to the meeting. So for the first time, I'm able to listen to the meeting free in my own clothes and hear this lady's story. And it's fucking just as awesome, you know? And afterwards, I go up to her and I fall on my knees and I'm like, you fucking saved my life. And she's like, get up. I'm like, I'm fucking serious, dude. I'm like, my fucking mom just died, and if she didn't die, I wouldn't even be here right now because I rode a bicycle through the lot, and I go on this whole thing, and she's like, slow down. I'm like, listen, dude, I was in jail like 10 years ago, 8 years ago, 7 years, however many years ago it was, and you fucking came. She's like, oh, yeah, I do an H&I there. I'm like, right, but you came, and you touched me, like, and I'm eternally grateful. And she's like, well, take my number and call me sometime. I'm like, call you? She's like, yeah. So I take her number, and when we get back to a regular place where you can call, because there's no service up there, I call her, and she's like, this is Rhonda, and I hang up on her. Because I don't know what the fuck to say, you know what I mean? And I did that like 4 times. The 5th time, she's like, are you going to hang up on me again? I was like, maybe. And I just let her lead the conversation because I fucking didn't know what to say. You know what I mean? Like in I learned A's in prison, all the A's, okay? And I didn't know how to really do it. We made it up as we went. And some of the girls that came in, they've been to meetings before, so they were able to help. But I had to learn stuff when I came out here. I had to learn how to fellowship. I had to learn how to trust people. Like, I had to learn all that stuff. And I'm super grateful that you guys were able to teach me that kind of stuff because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. So I get through my mom dying, and I get a job at the same place that you frequented. You called it, it's Evark now, but you called it Lark on Bellevue in Mesa. Yeah. That was my first job. And I got a job there as a peer support making $11.09 an hour. This is in 2017, and I would ride my little bicycle there. And I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know what I knew what a halfway house is because I lived in one. I didn't know a halfway house and a three-quarter house were the same thing. Sober living. I just learned all this stuff, and I put all my energy and effort into it. And I worked with my sponsor, and we went through the steps again. I got a different sponsor when I got out here, and we went through the steps. And I went to all the meetings, and I rode my little bicycle everywhere, and I stacked my chips, and I paid off both my fines, and I got my license back finally after 14 years. And after working at that job for 6 months, they wanted to talk to me. They pulled me in the office. And they're like, we need to talk to you. I'm like, fuck, here we go. I really like this job. Here it goes. And I'm on parole, too, so I'm like, what's going on, you know? They're like, we see something in you. I'm like, well, what do you mean? Like what? They're like, no, there's something special in you. We want to groom you to be a supervisor here. I mean, you need to clean up your mouth a little bit. And you're going to have to learn some boundaries because I didn't have good boundaries with the clients at that time. But we'd like to make you a supervisor. And I went from making $11.09 an hour to $19.60 an hour while on parole, living in a halfway house, riding a bicycle. Because God does that, right? My higher power does that. My higher power provides because I was putting the work in. So I become a supervisor, and I do that for a couple years. And I get a job at a car lot because I like to sell things, and I can't sell dope anymore, so now I slang cars. I still do that. It's still my side hustle. And I help people in recovery get on their feet and get into a car, if they're able to. I look at their stuff first, too. If it's going to put you in put you in trouble and put you back, it's not time for you to get a car. I'm not going to guide you that way. And I pride myself on that because today my word means a lot. When I say I'm going to do something, I do it. When I say I'm going to be there, I be there. And I'm usually 15 minutes early. It's a crazy thing. So I'm moving from that halfway house to a three-quarter house to my own spot within 3 months. Way too fast. Third to back row. Don't do it that fast. Stay in your halfway house for a year, okay? Then go to your next three-quarter house for another year. Then get your own apartment. Don't do it in 3 months. But I do that, and then I start to talk to my kids. They're now like 17 and 15 or something, and I start to talk to them. Now, while I was in prison, I left my kids when they were 3 and 5. My 5-year-old wouldn't talk to me for the whole 14 years, was pissed off at me. My 3-year-old started to come around as she grew up, and we would write letters back and forth and get to know each other because I didn't know her. So I start to talk to them, and then they come out one at a time to move to Arizona. So today, they're 19 and 21, and they both live in Arizona with me, which is cool because God did that. You know what I mean? Like, which is something that I always wished and prayed for. And I want you to know that your God is always listening, but your God will not give you more than you can handle. So your God will give you your kids back or restore those relationships back when it's time, not when you want it, because our best thinking is fucked up. My best thinking put me in prison for 7 years, so I don't get to pick when things get restored. I get to just do the right thing and, like I said, move the fuck out of the way and let the sunlight of the Spirit flow through me onto other people. So, I don't even know what time I'm supposed to go to. So here's the thing. So I'm working and I'm doing all this stuff, but I have this hole in my heart, you guys. I'm like really upset about my mom. And although I know she's not suffering anymore, because she would call me like, Kobe, are you going to save me? I'm like, Mom, I'm going to save you. No idea how I'm going to save this bitch, but I'm going to save her because that's my mama, you know? And I would tell her like, you can come out here and I'll figure it out, but you can't bring them goddamn cats. And she'd say, well, I can't leave my cats. So it was always like a struggle, you know, and then sometimes she'd call me and she's taking too much pills, and sometimes she'd call me wasted, and it was like a real thing. But I'm still, when your mom dies, you have a hole in your heart. It just is what it is. And I'm working at that crisis center, and you know, it's my job when you're cleared to ask you where you're going to go and what we're going to do. And if you tell me you're going to call your mom to pick you up, I'm instantly mad at you. And if you tell me you're going to go to ice cream with your mom, I'm mad. Like, I have a resentment against people that have a mom. And that's not okay. So the purpose of the steps right here is to get the hurt, shame, pain, guilt, resentment, to get all this bullshit out, right? Because we want the sunlight of the Spirit to flow through us onto other people. But it won't do that when all this shit's in the way. So I have this hurt because my fucking mom's gone. And I'm trying to help the best I can, but I can't because it hurts me. And my little lip quivers when I think about her. So I decide that I need a cat. And I tell my supervisor, I need a cat. And she says, well, I have an extra cat. Come again? Bitch, what do you mean you have an extra cat? Nobody has an extra cat, okay? So what's wrong with this motherfucker? She says, nothing. I have 3 cats. I found this one here at CBI. I brought her home. She's great, but she doesn't like kids. And when my kids come over on the weekends, she stays hid the whole time. So since you live over that apartment by yourself, the cat would be best fit for you. I said, don't be giving me a fucked up cat, because I don't have a car yet, okay? So if you bring me this cat, I can't take it to the vet, you know? And she's like, nothing's wrong with the cat. I said, okay. So she brings the cat to work, and I got an apartment right across from right here in the ghetto. Next, the dope house is here. All the Mexicans live here, and then some other stuff's here, and I'm right here in this little Mexican thing. And I walk to work every day. It was real simple, real easy. So anyway, she brings the cat, and I bring it over, and I put it in the house. And I put it in the corner, and I put up the litter box and all this stuff, and then I go to work. And then I go back in a couple hours, and I lift a pillow, and it's still right there. Okay. Come back over 2 hours later, it's still right there. No marks in the litter box. Something's going on. At the end of the 12-hour shift, I go back over to check in the cat. The cat's still there. I go storming back to work, and I said, bitch, that's a bunk cat. I don't want it. It's been in the same spot for 12 hours. I told you, don't give me a motherfucking bunk cat. She said, nothing is wrong with the cat, I promise you. It just needs a moment to warm up. I'm like, okay, this bitch. So anyways, the cat ends up coming around, and I name her Cat. Because everything that I love dies. You know how we get like that? So I name the cat Cat. I put a little bell on her, and she's cute. And I go to work, and I walk home, and she greets me every day, and it's just me and my cat. And we do our thing, and I really do like her. And I go to sleep one night, it's about a month after having the cat, and I sob myself to sleep every night, I do, because I want my mom, and I want her to see how good I'm doing, and all the things, and I sob myself to sleep, and I wake up at about 12 o'clock one night, and I'm startled, and something is right here, and I look over, and it's the fucking cat, and I'm like, hey cat, it scared me, hey cat. And I swear on everything that I love and know, with my dad sitting right there, my mom starts talking to me through this fucking cat, okay? I can smell her perfume, I can hear her voice, and she tells me she's right here with me. And I grab the cat, and I'm like, Mom! Oh, Mom, I love you! And to this day, I do not miss my mom, because I have her, you guys. She's in a fucking cat. I promise you, she is. Her body is resting. I don't get the phone calls anymore. I get, every day when I walk in the house, I get to say, Mom. And I told you my mom was a drunk whore, and I mean that. You can ask my dad. And no harm, no foul. It just is what it is. Some of us are whores, and some of us are not. Where's the whores at? Okay, yeah. So my mom has had sex with all the boyfriends that I ever had, you know, when I was younger. She's just that lady, okay? So and she, this is how I know she's in the cat, okay? So every time Boo gets out of the shower, he opens up the shower and there's my mom.
With a tail wagging, all stretched out.
Like, hey, Boo. She does. And then sometimes we'll be laying down and we hear and we look and there's we have a mirror right here and we look over and he's like, what's she doing? I'm like, she's trying to get out of her fucking cat suit. She's in the mirror scratching, you know? So, and my kids know that that's their grandmother and we take family photos and I'll say, go pet your grandmother. And they do, and it works out just fine. And I don't miss my mom, and I don't have that hurt anymore or that pain. So I am able to help you 100,000% because that has been removed, because that's what my God does. And so because I'm an alcoholic and an addict, this is where the cat thing comes in, you know? So I can't just have one cat. So I happened to save this other cat, this other kitten, and then I had two. And then I noticed where I was at, there was a big pet population that was not fixed. So I did like Bob Barker said, and I was getting them spayed and neutered. So I would bring them in to get them fixed, and then they wouldn't leave. They liked it. And then I found this one little kitten, and she was just so little. And I'm like, there's no way she can have babies. So I took her to get a sonogram, and they said, yeah, she's going to have three. And I birthed them all. So how could I not keep them? And, you know, once you have seven, then you have eight. I mean, now I'm just at 12. It just is what it is. And the last one, he's a little baby kitten. Somebody called me and said, Kobe, I just almost hit a kitten in the middle of the road. You have like a cat rescue, don't you? I said, no, Jack, I don't. I just have 11 cats. Why? Well, I have this fucking kitten, and what am I going to do with it? I don't know what you're going to do with it. Ask your wife if you can have it. And he's like, all right, I'm going to ask her, but if not, I'm going to bring it over. I'm like, okay. So then I tell him, Jack might be bringing us a cat. And you know what he says? Okay. Not even no. Like, he could have like put up a fit, so I had to call back and say something. He just says, okay. So here comes Jack with this fucking kitten in a little carrier, and I pull it out, and it's full of blood and shit. And I'm like, oh my God, Jack, what's wrong with this kitten? He said, nothing. I said, I'm telling you, look. He's like, oh, shit. When I took a shower, my dog was playing with it. He might have bit it. So I rushed this fucking little kitten to the VCA Animal Hospital, and sure as shit, the dog punctured the stomach. So $900 later and some stitches, this is my motherfucking kitten. Because I was originally going to take him in and then see who at work who wanted him, you know, but now I've put $900 into him and now I love him and named him Jinx because he got hit by a car and bit by a dog all in the same night. Now he's mine. So that's number 12. And I would love to tell you that that's enough because I have a whole nother job of cleaning the house. Like, and I'm on my hands and knees in the morning and at night, bleach, everything, the whole nine. I promise you, if you walked in my house, you would never know there's 12 cats in there. I don't get down like that. And I would love to tell you that I'm not going to take any more animals. But that's just not the truth. And my sponsor told me to come up here and tell the truth, you know? But God gives me the will and the strength and the money to take care of all these. So I feel like it's part of my living amends. I really do. I have a couple different home groups. I have some commitments. I sponsor like anywhere between 5 and 12 bitches, depending on where they're at in their life. I always say yes. I always raise my hands, and I always say yes, and I always give my phone number out, but I also don't chase people around, so if they don't call me, they don't call me. It is what it is, and if they don't call me for 6 months and then they call me, that's fine. You know what I mean? So I don't care. I'm a big part of all the A's. I love, love, love CA because you guys are all inclusive. You guys don't, you're not like AA where you're like strict and all that stuff. You're not like too much like CMA where everybody's like wiggle room and all the time and on the phone. Like nobody's even been on their phone, which is kind of crazy. I like CA a lot. You guys are very welcoming and warm, and it makes me happy to be a part of a fellowship like this. And I want you guys all to know that we all have the same opportunity, okay? We all come from different walks of life, but we all have the same gift of desperation, which brings us into this room. And that gift of desperation can then turn into a gift of hope for everybody else. So it doesn't matter how many days, weeks, years, eons that you have or don't have. Everybody has a story to tell. So I really hope that everyone's finding a place and a time to share their experience, strength, and hope with other people. Because there's something that you've been through on purpose that someone else is supposed to hear. Like, this is not about us, you guys. This is about saving other people. And it's about throwing out life preservers to those that are drowning out there. And it is absolutely our responsibility to stand on the edge and throw out life preservers to those that are drowning. And with that, I'll pass.